This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 50, Sexy Time. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful Friday with another edition of GamesAtWork.biz with my wonderful co-hosts. And starting over with you, Phaedra, how the heck are you?
I am doing fantastic. How are you, Michael?
Peachy keen. And Michael Martin, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here from Hungary.
I'm hungry, but that's because I hadn't had lunch yet.
I was going to say I'm hot, but I know Phaedra is hotter still. So there you go.
It is. Actually, it's nice and cool today. It's not so bad, but heat's coming.
Oh, yeah.
When July hits.
So I really enjoyed last week's show. I felt bad that I couldn't be on it. You know, I think, Michael, you're right. I was coming down off that caffeine buzz.
You were. It must have been. You need to have another. I don't know. Have you had your six shots today?
No, I've only had three today.
All right. Well, so why don't we jump right in? Because speaking of hot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Phaedra, did you find a link?
No, I did not find
it. Was
a
Michael.
Link.
It was Michael's link, wasn't it?
It was definitely not my link. In fact, I was the one who was saying this is a family show and possibly we shouldn't be
talking about it. You know, we have to realize about, you know, what are people doing with gaming and new technology and how does it all come together? And unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your perspective, one of the things that tends to drive technology forward is people's base desires. How's that? And I found this link shortly after listening to the show from last week on the very first Google Glass augmented reality, let's call it adult game.
Well, it's not actually Google Glass. It's Oculus Rift.
Thank you. Good correction. I was trying to remember. It's Oculus Rift. And as people who may have been following Oculus Rift know, unfortunately, one of the original designers and inventors of that passed away recently. Was hit while walking down the street, a car hit him. So, bummer.
Was he wearing his glasses?
I don't think so.
Playing this game?
Well, if he was playing this game, he probably didn't feel getting hit by the car. But I remember years and years and years and years ago playing a game called Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
Oh, you have talked about this on the show before.
Right. Which was what it was. It sounds a lot more risque than it actually was. It was a text adventure by the guys who did Zork and other things. Infocom, I believe, did it. And, you know, one of the ideas, it was this pulp-based sci-fi. You get kidnapped and end up on Mars and, you know, Flash Gordon type thing.
Well, very Barbarella-esque,
yes.
For those who remember Barbarella.
Yes. Well, shortly after that, I'm trying to remember the company that did it, but they did a bunch of these graphic versions of text adventures. There was like a Space Cab or Space HQ one, a whole bunch of these games. And, you know, they were walk around, click on something, pick up stuff, and try to figure out the larger adventure. Well, there was a game called Leisure Suit Larry.
Yep. And I'm just rereading everything about that on Wikipedia right now.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Leisure Suit Larry was this hip 70s guy, you know, leisure suits. Disco Dan, if you watch The Simpsons, who was always trying to
Schmooze
is probably a polite way of putting it. He was heavily into getting the ladies, right? I can't believe how many versions of Leisure Suit Larry came out. And I've actually never played it, so I can't talk from experience. But
I can.
You've played it?
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about Leisure Suit Larry from your perspective, because I know they eventually came out with a 3D version.
Well, I never went quite that far. I played one of the very early, like, Apple II versions of the game, or maybe it was an Apple II, maybe it was an IBM PC. But it was pretty much like the Wikipedia articles describing it. You know, it was basic graphics. It was about a guy who would try to pick up women and usually fail miserably. The graphics were very basic, and it was funny. I mean, it was not a text based adventure. It was a graphics based adventure. And so instead of carrying around the sword and shield and helmet and going after monsters and goblins, you had to actually interact with people.
Yeah, but really the mechanics, other than it was graphic, were pretty much very similar to the original text based games.
It was. I mean, you went from place to place. You had to open the door and go to the next thing and yep. stuff like that. So, yeah, you did. Now, this is something I did not know about. Maybe you did or didn't. Apparently,
I think we can say 100% that I either did or I didn't.
There was a Kickstarter in last year, apparently in April. And it was to get Leisure Suit Larry to actually have another release. And they wanted $500,000 and they got 6,500.
So, well, that explains a lot, doesn't it?
Sorry, $650,000.
Oh, okay.
More story, more dialogues, more character. There's going to be an HD version of the game called Leisure Suit Larry in the Land of the Lounge Lizards Reloaded. And it's supposed to be...
Well, that was the original version, was Leisure Suit Larry in the Land of the Lounge Lizards.
Yep. EGA original 1987, yep. EGA remake in 1991. So I guess that was a PC game. That's probably when I was playing it. But yeah, so there's going to be another one. It's supposed to be coming out in – it was supposed to come out in May. Hang on a second.
Oh, wait a minute.
Well, so okay. Now I need to – I may have to edit Wikipedia. Yeah, it's Wikipedia.
Speak you can
Klingon,
edit it.
Too, by the way. da-da-da. Delayed to May, June.
Yeah, so Reloaded, delayed right to June.
So Fader, did you ever play this game?
I'm betting not.
I did not play Leisure Suit Larry. Nope. Nor really? Did I play the leather-bound goddesses of what was it?
No, it's Leather Goddesses of Phobos. Phobos. Not leather-bound goddesses. That's a totally different genre.
No, didn't play those. But yeah, no comment.
So anyway, again, my point for hitting that link up for the show was really to say, you know, one, how do we push technology and gaming forward? And, you know, sometimes it gets pushed forward by things that the average person is probably not going to play with. It's just kind of interesting, and it kind of fit into some of the discussions that you guys had last week. So
very cool. Well, that was fun, and knowing now that there's a new Leisure Suit Larry, that's kind of fun too. Phaedra, before we lose you, you did actually give us a couple of links that maybe are hot in a different way.
And I couldn't get through to the one. I got a 404 page when I clicked the one link.
I had some trouble with that too.
The Duke study.
Let's focus on the one that came through, right? So you gave us a link about a cyber war game to be held on Wall Street to test the banking and trading industry and their ability to react in the case of a large scale cyber attack.
Yes, indeed. And what there's good things and bad things about this story. First of all, when I have spoken to groups who are interested in games pertaining to cyber defense, my initial reaction is, yes, finally, this is really great. And then when I talk to them in more detail, I realize that the game that they're looking for initially to fund isn't necessarily to crowdsource new techniques to prevent cyber terrorism. It's not to teach basic principles of how to defend against cyber terrorism. What they're seeking to fund is persuasion games to persuade executives, to persuade people in power that this is an important topic to invest in.
So they're not trying to persuade them for cyber terrorism?
No. They're really using it. They want to invest in persuasion tools. So that what the Wall Street story in particular, I think, is a great example of actually utilizing it beyond persuasion as a means to start crowdsourcing defensive mechanisms. So I think I'd like to see more and more and more of examples of this nature. I guess we have to start with persuasion games so people can invest more in the meaty games. But, you know, I guess you got to start somewhere.
Interesting. I really like that twist on it, because in part of my day job, I really care and spend a lot of time working on planning cycles and portfolio management. And, you know, that's the sort of thing, right? If you're persuaded to give more weight to one thing versus another, then you'll invest in it. But right. It also comes at the reduction of something else, because they're still playing with a fixed, you know, sum in the end.
Well, the thing that I found interesting about this article you know, was the concept, but not necessarily the execution, right? I find we do a lot of when you're doing emergency preparedness or other planning, we tend to do very controlled simulations or controlled games. I know my wife works at the university, and they were doing an exercise this week for an emergency event on campus. Which, you know, they're so controlled. What I think would be much more interesting, again, a callback to last week's show, is if you would crowdsource a lot of the activities that drove the game. So instead of having a controlled network disruption exercise, as this one talks about, using something like a community of practitioners to actually behave like Chaos Monkey. Are you familiar with Chaos Monkey?
Nope.
Chaos Monkey is an open source tool that was originally done by Netflix and is now used by Amazon and others to randomly disrupt parts of their network infrastructure to ensure that the infrastructure stands up on its own under stress and does not adversely impact their customers. Okay, and so it's literally it's a bot. You know, a daemon or whatever on their infrastructure that goes off, just randomly shuts stuff down. And if the stuff shuts down and it doesn't adversely impact your customer, you know that you have a well-developed, well-structured, scalable, appropriate infrastructure. Now, when I think about this one, I mean, they're really talking about a simulated network disruption exercise.
Yeah.
That, you know, Chaos Monkey could actually do that for them. And as long as it did not impact their, you know, their trading infrastructure, it says they have an appropriate infrastructure in place. Take that into much more specific exercises on online attacks. Say maybe they just have a group of people that are executing DNS attacks against some subset of their infrastructure as a way to test the same thing out. You could crowdsource that. You could use, like I said, something like Chaos Monkey, etc., to really do that in such a way to validate that things are okay.
A Mechanical Turk crowdsourced attack vector.
Yeah. I mean, the thing like that gets most companies from a security perspective is not the stuff they planned for, right? It's the stuff you didn't plan for. The stuff you weren't certain you could plan for. And so by using a crowdsourced kind of unstructured attack instead of a well-planned out and thought and executed simulation, you're probably going to get much more appropriate attack vectors that are more realistic and things that you actually have to address.
I completely agree.
This is awesome.
One other thing I'd like to point out, since we're talking about recent news, this past week, DARPA released research that they had done in conjunction with Duke University regarding the advantage that gamers have over non-gamers. Did you guys read this report?
I think that was the link that we couldn't get to.
The one from
FedScope. That's the 404. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what the study was, in effect, is they took 125 students and they put a screen in front of them that flashed a group of 8 letters for 1/10 of a second, right? And then the letters turn off And then an arrow goes to the place where one of the letters had been. And the test is you've got to remember what letter used to be at that particular spot where the arrow is. And the gamers perform significantly better than non-gamers.
You know, not surprising. I just isn't not – it's not surprising.
Yeah.
Because that's –
So in essence, they're saying that with gamers can make better use of visual stimuli and be able to, you know, respond better in that way. The controversy, just reading some of the blogs that have come out of this is, yeah, but, you know, does it improve their critical thinking skills? So, you know, that will be the never ending controversy, yeah,
that's,
I guess.
That's your debate. You know, sure you can read.
I think we should have a rant on that.
Understand.
Right.
We could do a rant show on that.
We could.
Well, I don't know if we want to, but that was for you, Michael.
Yeah, and following up on last week's show, you guys were talking about adaptive learning and crowdfunding. And I saw an article. What is this, perfect timing or what? I was actually reading this magazine called Time Magazine.
that must be the paper magazine.
That's the paper magazine. And they had a whole section on adaptive learning in it. And unfortunately, the article itself, we'll link it in the show notes, but it's behind their paywall, so you kind of get a teaser and that's it. And within it, they talk about this company called Newton, K-N-E-W-T-O-N, which the founder 10 years ago was really convinced that there was this cool way of doing adaptive learning. And at the time, he was working for one of the test prep companies, I think Kaplan.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology wasn't there. The industry just did not get it. And he tried for 10 years to kind of advance the art and get funding for a project that would actually set up a platform for adaptive learning so that individual students, say in math as an example, would have the platform teach them the way they actually learn. And so, for example, if you're doing mathematics, one person might start off with statistics and probability, go to algebra, then decimals, then the numeric system, then functions, and then equations and expressions, while another person, same courseware, would start off with decimals, go to trig, exponentials, fractional division, numeric systems, and then ratios and probabilities.
You know, I really like this. I didn't know about Newton before you shared this with me, but this is exactly the kind of young ladies primer sort of method of the system adapting to the individual instead of the other way around.
Yeah, and, right? And so it starts off with some basic capabilities to kind of gauge where you are and then dynamically adjust the curriculum based off of your skills. And ultimately, everybody still learns everything. It just plays to the strengths and takes them down the path to get to each of the aspects of the curriculum. And the interesting thing is, we are now at the point where the market and the investors in this space are starting to get it. And these guys at Newton just got a huge $33 million investment in October about a year ago. Year and a half ago, because people are starting to understand that this stuff works.
You know, I'm reading now about their platform and their approach, and I'm going to have to really look at the PDF associated with it too. But here's the thing that's grabbing me. It's the Newton Adaptive Learning Platform, the way they're describing it, is taking into account all the data, the big data and the analytics of other students who've gone through the same thing and adapting to the current student based upon the reaction and what happened with the other students who've gone before them. So this is really a learning system, Peter Senge, et cetera, in the grandest sort of the way that everybody who goes through makes the system smarter, makes it faster, easier for the next ones to go through.
Absolutely.
Man, can you imagine – you apply this to something like, say, oh, I don't know, programming.
Hey! Right?
So you could do this by saying
– leveling up your Hadoop skills.
Exactly. You're going to look at the code. You're going to look at for efficiency. You're going to look at it for effectiveness, performance. And based upon all the other people who went before you, it could pinpoint your learning needs. I was going to say deficiencies, but, you know, your learning needs, show where there could be some options for doing better, and giving you potentially some real-time education that says, hey, you know what? If you use this technique, you can increase your code's efficiency by 33%.
Yep. And one thing, you know, knowing that this adaptive learning style, right, is starting to come on into its own, I'd really like to hear if there are other platforms that some of our listeners are either engaged with, using, or know of, and maybe even start working on building out a set of links on the website of interesting capabilities and interesting products or organizations doing stuff in the serious games, in the, you know, adaptive learning, games at work type behaviors and spaces for people to use as a reference.
I think you're spot on. I mean, this is the chocolate and peanut butter moment, right? So if you can take the hard data and you can couple it with the social and the gaming kind of capability, why don't we throw in mobile for just good measure?
Why not?
Boy, do you have something fun to think about.
Absolutely.
Wow. This is really, really quite cool. It reminds me a little bit of a post that I shared up on Google Plus. We won't talk about it here for right now, but it was kind of in the same vein to give us what's really happening in the marketplace, why are the things going forward this way, and how do game-based learning interact with what we were talking about with Dragonbox, which we've brought up already a couple of times here.
Yeah. I think that's great. And, you know, I haven't had a chance yet to read the investment analysis that they point to in the article. And I think that'll be something pretty interesting to read through.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and incidentally, I do want to mention that when I was in the States a couple weeks ago, I introduced Dragonbox into the Chapel Hill school system via a couple of vectors. We'll use that word again. I'm very excited about what I think will be the results of just seeding that in a couple of places and saying, look how much fun this is, and look at what people are, you know, kids are doing and enjoying it. We are on the cusp of doing things differently. And
there must
very,
be
very
something
excited.
Wrong if kids are enjoying learning, right?
Yeah, exactly. What's going on here? Teaching them how to do math while they're playing a game? What?
Yep.
You can't have that.
Well, you sent out another link, and I laughed. And my favorite part of it was the mother with the two little kids that were, let's say, racking up the score. So why don't you introduce the other link you sent out?
Yeah, so in the true spirit of gamesatwork.biz, we were looking for other examples of games at work. And I love advertising. I just think good advertising, it gives a compelling message, a compelling call to action. Games do that in a lot of ways too. So when you combine, you know, that particular chocolate with that particular peanut butter, some interesting things come out of it. So Ogilvy and Mather had created an advertising campaign for Ford Motor Company that they did in 2012. And this video that we'll share in the show notes, awesome video. You really need to watch this, and maybe we should just embed it right on the site so it's easy to see.
I try to embed at least one graphic or video in most of our posts lately.
Awesome. So
if you only subscribe to this on iTunes or some aggregator, and you're just listening to the show, go to the site and check out some of the cool videos that we've got linked in, and some of the pictures from various recordings. It's good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So let me spell it out for you, and I'm going to give you the punchline too, because maybe not. I won't give you the full punchline. I will give you most of it.
You'll give us the punch.
What Ford did is they said, hey, you know what? We're going to prove out the concept of the automatic parallel parking that has now been built into some of their product line, and show how good it is by going to one of the places in the world that they believe is most challenged in terms of their parking.
Yeah, that's a polite way of putting it. Yeah, the video is a little bit more direct.
Yeah. So what they do is they say, hey, you know, look, we're in France and people in France don't know how to park. And they had all these people saying, yeah, we don't know how to park.
But our listeners in France, you guys are the best parkers that we know. In France.
You're the most talented, smartest people that we
good
know.
Looking, good looking. Yeah, you got it.
So
those other people
don't know how to park, and they were showing these people attempting to park by bumping the bumpers left and right. They showed
nudging the other cars.
Really happy that, you know, hey, I repair, you know, 5-10 bumpers a week, and this is good business. This is awesome. So Ford wanted to show how, you know, their solution could be even better. So what they did is they created a giant pinball board that they hooked up on the edge of a building, and then they parked two cars and gave enough room to park, I would say. It looked like enough room to me.
Well,
anyway.
Enough room to park a traditional European compact car.
Yes, but there was enough room, and then they wired it all up so it looked like the scoreboard of a pinball machine, and then they lit up underneath the cars, the front and the back car that were on the side of the road in front of the building, so that if you touched one, the billboard would give, you know, bumper noises and start to rack up points and would light up like a bumper. And it was
a pinball bumper.
And yes, thank you. A pinball bumper. So the car that was attempting to park was the pinball.
Yep.
The other cars that were already parked there were the pinball bumpers. And the
building was the machine.
and the building was a scoreboard. And as the driver tried to park and kept on bumping the cars in front and back, they would light up. They would sound off noises. People would look at them. You know, it was just a riot. And you should watch the video through to the end, because with the high score is a spoiler that I will not spoil. You should see what the high score was. Fantastic game that is advertising, that captures people's attention, and has a terrific outcome for conveying how good the technology that Ford has actually is.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Like I said, my favorite part still was the mother and the two little kids, and the kids are standing in the parking space kicking the cars. Yeah. Just to light up the bumpers. I'm like, yeah, I could do that.
Well, you know, you wouldn't you? It's like, hey, what's going on here?
You know, I'd do that in a heartbeat. That's how I got in trouble as a kid.
There you go.
Awesome.
So I think we're about ready to call it a day. But before we do, I've got one more thing I'd like to try out with you guys and see how this works. So I've been listening to the Sound Opinion guys on their podcast here recently, and they have a piece of their show that I like a lot called the Desert Island Jukebox. Ooh. And I thought, you know, let me do a shameful borrowing of their concept. And Phaedra, I'm really curious that if you were to put a quarter into the Desert Island arcade machine or game machine, what game would you want to have if you were sitting on that desert hot island with nothing to play but what was in that jukebox?
Oh, my God.
Can you give me one? Just give me one.
Something very old school?
It could be, or it could be something new. I mean, you know, we could upgrade the machine and put a fan on it and, you know, have it have a thermal core and everything.
Oh, man. Would I have NetConnect to play with friends if I'm on this desert?
Yeah, that was my exact thing, the thought too, Phaedra. I was going, well, that'd be simple. It'd be something like WoW, where I have a community and I can actually then reach out and go, help, help, I'm trapped on a desert island.
Guild Wars, League of Legends, yep. I don't know.
Star Wars Galaxies.
That's a hard question. I don't know. Guild Wars 2, maybe. I'm into that right now.
That's pretty awesome. What
about you guys?
I don't, Michael. What about you?
Well, so if I had the net connection, to be honest, it would, and this is going to be a surprise, I think it would probably not be a game as such, but it'd be something like Minecraft, where there's a social aspect to the game, and it's more than just a game. So you're constantly creating and changing the world, and you know that way, I wouldn't be dependent on, you know, Blizzard coming out with the next add-on or the next downloadable content to keep the game fresh. Michael, you?
Very, very interesting. You know, I was originally thinking a little older school, but that was just because the idea struck me on the drive home. mine would be one that does not require a hot internet connection. I was thinking about Gauntlet. You know, It was just a game I love to play. And
Green Elf needs health badly.
Elf does need health badly. Elf needs food badly. Elf needs food badly. That was my one. But, you know, maybe this will be a recurring theme. Maybe it won't. We can add things to the jukebox. We can stick it on the side of the window of the blog and the everything else.
So I think what would be really interesting is our listeners maybe to, put a response to this show or tweet to us, what game would be in your jukebox?
I think a better question would be, instead of the deserted island theme, more like, given your mood right now, what game would you want to play? Do you want to shoot zombies or do you want to,
Let me see. Mood right now.
Pac-Man.
Breakout. Breakout.
Given the
punch
mood.
Punch out.
Oh, yeah. Punch out would be good too, right? Body blow. Uppercut. Well, guys, it's been a great show. Phaedra, thank you for the great links this week. And we'll talk to you all soon, right?
My pleasure. Peace out, guys.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.